Scenario is repeated to remind the world and you and me. The day of his wrath is come. Now, from that point in Revelation chapter 6, verse 17, the word wrath appears 13 times in the book of Revelation. 13 times in that one book alone. That should get our attention, shouldn't it? Rather than repent, though, when the wrath is poured out, the people of the planet will become more rebellious. They'll hide in the dens and the rocks from the face of the Lord that sits on the throne, but they won't repent. And when the bowl judgments and the trumpet judgments are poured out, they won't repent. When they're scorched with great heat and excruciating pain and bombarded with hailstones weighing up to 100 pounds each, they will not repent, but instead will blaspheme God. Now, how about you? As you hear these words, are you prone to rise up in rebellion and in anger against God? I don't want to worship a God like that. If God isn't all love and put up with all of my rebellion and all of my... Then I don't want any part of Him. Really? So you're placing yourself then among the majority on the planet who will accept the mark of the beast in their pride and who will rebel against God even when they're experiencing His wrath being poured out in a succession of judgments, just as He did upon Pharaoh when He delivered God's people by the hand of Moses out of Egypt. You see, they rebelled too. Pharaoh hardened his heart until his firstborn was killed. How about you? Mankind can be very, very stubborn and very, very proud. Well, here's the final one, number 18. How about coming against Israel and Jerusalem? The prophet Zechariah, in chapter 12, talks about the nations that come against Jerusalem. And Jerusalem becomes a burdensome stone. And God says He's going to seek to destroy all those nations that come against Jerusalem. In the book of Joel, He talks about Israel as the apple of His eye. And He says that all the nations that come together, to conspire together, to part the land that God has deeded permanently and eternally to the physical descendants of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. He said, I am going to bring those nations in my wrath and judge them and plead with them, the scripture says, in the valley of Jehoshaphat. Friends, it's not going to be a pretty picture. We don't want to place ourselves in the crosshairs of God's wrath. Rather, we want to place ourselves in a position of rejoicing. And that's what the Feast of Tabernacles is all about, where Jews all over the world this week are celebrating, following the day of the blowing of the trumpets, calling the people to repentance, and the days of awe, followed by Yom Kippur, which is the opening of the books and confession of sin and coming clean with God. I want to urge you to do that today. Come clean with God. Confess your sin. And He's faithful and just to forgive it and cleanse you from all unrighteousness. Thanks for joining us here today on Viewpoint. I want to urge you to become a partner. Send your gifts by faith to Save America Ministries, P.O. Box 70879, Richmond, Virginia, 23251. We're preparing the way of the Lord for history's final hour.
You've been listening to Viewpoint with Chuck Chrismeyer.
This is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at and that illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you, the views expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views, and for the next hour, they're going to be the views of James Corbett. And he writes a newsletter, The Corbett Report. He lives over in Japan, but he writes about what's happening here in America and the financial situation. I read one of his articles recently. I was so taken with it. We tracked him down, and from Japan, James Corbett. Thank you so very much for being with us, James.
Well, thank you for having me, Dr. Stan. It's great to be here.
Well, certainly, you're writing from a distant land, certainly, and looking at America perhaps a little differently than people are living here. But I think that we have some very real economic problems. So why don't you just pick up and give us your appraisal of what's going on?
Well, I think you're absolutely right to say that there are some pretty big economic problems at the moment. And obviously, even though I'm not in America, I'm not an American citizen, I'm actually Canadian living in Japan, but certainly America is the industrial and economic engine of the world, or at least it is up until this point, and who knows what's going to play out from here. But certainly I think every concerned citizen in the world needs to be studying what's happening in America very closely, because it is and has been for a long time the bellwether of the way in which the world economy is going. And that's exactly right, that we're in some very, very serious economic times right now. And unfortunately, as I'm sure you're aware, and I'm sure many of your listeners are aware, this is not an economic meltdown that has just happened spontaneously or by chance. It's very much a well-planned part of, well, the overall economic plan that the people in charge of the economic system itself have had for quite a long time. And that's really the aspect of it that I've been researching and studying for the last several years now, and what I tend to concentrate on is the Corbett Report. Basically, I came to this type of alternative news and information through the 9/11 Truth Movement, and it was when I started discovering that there were some very, very serious questions about what happened on 9/11 that had never been accurately talked about or addressed in the mainstream media that I started to get into the alternative media. And as I started to discover more and more information, I thought to myself that it just couldn't possibly be true. There are all these questions, but it could not possibly be true that those attacks were other than what they were portrayed to be, because how could such a thing take place? And it wasn't until I started studying the economic system and where money really comes from and what money really is that I started to realize that our society and the world economy as a whole is very much in the hands of a very, very few people at the top. And it's a system that's been designed that way, and we've been led into it and steered into it for centuries. So that's the aspect of it that I've spent my time looking at and studying. And it's really the horrible, sad truth that I know that you've talked about on your show before, and many of your guests have as well, that unfortunately the vast majority of the money in the American economy and many economies around the world is, in fact, debt owed with interest to the bankers. And I think that's a system that we can all agree is only good if you're a banker.
And I think you're absolutely right. And your comment that this happened intentionally, I think this is so vitally important for our listeners to understand, because nobody's going to tell them that. I mean, we're being told by President Obama that he's trying to get more jobs here, and they're trying to keep people in their homes, and the problem is that nothing they do seems to work. And as far as getting jobs, you know, they said if we didn't get the stimulus bill through, you know, why the unemployment rate would go up to 8%. And so we did get the stimulus bill through, and the unemployment rate went up to 9.6%. It's right there, 9.5, 9.6%. More and more people are losing their homes, no matter what they do, and nothing seems to work. And then, of course, the possibility, could it be that it wasn't intended to work? Could it be that we're really not trying to solve the problem, we're trying to convince the American people? How could President Obama go before the American people and say, my job is to wreck our economy? My job is to ship American jobs overseas, and I'm going to pursue this very effectively. Well, the idea that this is really planned, I think this is an important issue, and this is one of the things I was rather intrigued that you would have gotten this, because certainly I haven't heard anybody else say this but myself. So you go right ahead, sort of develop these ideas that you have.
Right. Well, I certainly don't think that I'm one of the only ones seeing it, but it is certainly a minority opinion, I guess, at this point. But one of the guests that I have on the Corbett Report quite regularly is Bob Chapman of the International Forecaster, and he has gone into this at some length as well. But you can look at this from a very wide-ranging historical perspective, or you can look in the near term. But I think one of the important things to keep in mind is that even in a depression, money is neither created nor destroyed per se. It's only transferred, or value, actual wealth is neither created or destroyed, only transferred to other hands. And that's exactly what happened in the 1930s and during the Great Depression, which, of course, was absolutely terrible for the vast majority of the public, but very, very good for the bankers who managed to go and foreclose on so much land and property and scoop that up for pennies on the dollar. And after the Depression is over, yes, people can return to producing wealth and creating value for themselves, but unfortunately they've lost what they once had, which has all been transferred into the bankers' pockets. And unfortunately we see that that's actually part of the game plan, is to, I guess the shearing of the sheep is a term that's sometimes used, but basically to plunge people's assets down into a position where they have to foreclose or give them up or sell them off, and unfortunately then the people who are already in the position to benefit from that can scoop it up at bargain basement prices. So it's important to understand that when we talk about the creation of a depression, this isn't even a controversial issue really anymore. The Great Depression has been, of course, extremely well studied by this point, and Nobel Prize-winning economist Milton Friedman, of course, was one of the people who really examined it and found that the Depression had less to do with the stock market collapse per se than it was the contraction of the money supply, which took place between 1929 and 1933, and it was the Federal Reserve that basically engineered that, of course, the privately owned central bank that's in charge of the American economy. And not only did he make that assertion and back it up, but then several years later, the chairman of the Federal Reserve, the current chairman, who was not the chairman at the time, Ben Bernanke, gave a speech at Milton Friedman, I think it was his 90th birthday, saying that, yes, the Federal Reserve caused the Great Depression, but no, we won't do it again, ha, ha, ha. So it's not even controversial, really, to understand that this has been done by the bankers before, and to understand why or how it's happening right now, it's, again, not very difficult to trace the connections between the Wall Street banking interests, the financial interests, and the...
Hold that thought. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and James was just talking about the Great Depression. And, of course, the Great Depression was not caused by most of what we've been told by the collapse of the stock market. That was a secondary reaction. Basically, what they did was they doubled the reserve requirements of the bank so that they could not lend anywhere near as much as they had. That was, of course, and then the big banks were all in on it as well. They simply contracted the money supply. You couldn't go out and borrow money. You were in the market. You were on leverage. And suddenly, you couldn't have leverage anymore. You had to pay the full thing. They could actually demand that you come up with the money tomorrow. Well, where are you going to come up with $10,000 or $100,000? There's just no way to do it. That's why people were jumping out of windows. But the whole scam was intentionally done by the banking industry to destroy our economy. And they did a real good job. And as James points out, then they were able to go around and pick up the factories. They were able to pick up the homes. They were able to pick up the businesses. And, of course, it was a wonderful thing for the bankers. But they'd done this time and time again. They've done this repeatedly down through the over the last 100 years, haven't they?
They certainly have. I mean, we call it the business cycle, but that is really a miniature scale version of what we saw in the 1930s. And unfortunately, what we're being plunged into right now is obviously much, much greater than that. It's the control over the statistics itself, which the government obviously massages to try to make things look better than they are. But when you look at the real statisticians like John Williams of ShadowStats.com and people like that, they point out the inflation is much, much higher than the CPI would indicate, or unemployment is upwards of 22%, not the 9% or whatever the government tries to tell you it is. So obviously they try to hide things like this, and they even try to hide the fact that we're currently in the Depression, trying to say that there was a recovery from the recession of 2008, but of course there hasn't been, and unfortunately we're starting to see that play out now. A lot of people look to the stock market as a bellwether of the economy, but they fail to appreciate that the stock market is really tied to the value of the dollar itself. And if the dollar is lowering, then the stock market is actually going to go up because you need to spend more of those worthless pieces of paper to try to get those worthless pieces of stock. And it looks like the stocks are increasing in value, but in fact, the dollar is really just sinking.
Well, of course, the interesting thing is about the stock market. We've seen this tremendous run-up, but on a very low volume. Now, you don't get a run-up in the stocks on a low volume unless, of course, somebody's manipulating the stock market. Do you think that they're manipulating the stock market to raise the prices?
Oh, there's no doubt they have been for quite a while. And unfortunately, if they can do that to manipulate the prices upwards, they can just as easily do it to manipulate the prices downwards. And I think we saw that a few months ago when the prices dropped, 10% in 1 hour of trading on a Friday and then suddenly leveled off. No, there's the President's Working Group on Financial Matters, which was set up by Reagan in the aftermath of the crash of 87, that is admittedly and on record there to make sure that the stock market does not plunge precipitously like that again. And anyone who studies the stocks on a day-to-day basis can find those moments when stock prices across the board immediately start leveling off or rising in unison in a very straight pattern, and they can say, oh, well, that's the President's Working Group on Financial Matters in action. And it's something that's well-known in the industry and on Wall Street, but I think less well-known among the general public.
Well, I think the average individual really doesn't understand the monetary system, and they're not supposed to. That's the thing. I mean, they've made it intentionally very complicated. And one of the most interesting things to me is the fact that, about a couple of years ago, why the Federal Reserve System said, well, you know, we've been following the M3 money statistics for many years, but we finally figured out that they're really not that important, so we're not going to publish them anymore. I notice you laugh. Why don't you explain to our listeners why the M3 is so important, why the Federal Reserve doesn't want us to know what's happening to M3. People don't understand these terms because these are the sort of terms they use just to confuse the common people. But, you know, the common people are pretty smart if you just explain to them what they're doing. And what they're doing, of course, is destroying our monetary system. But could you explain M3 and why why they would want to quit reporting it? And I'm sure if you're reading Sean Williams, you know what's really happening to M3.
Well, as a matter of fact, I'm not reading Sean Williams. Perhaps you can fill me in on that. But basically, there are different ways of calculating money supply, and most people wouldn't think about it, but money is not simply just the notes and coins that you carry in your wallet. Of course, it involves all sorts of different types of stores of value, like Federal Reserve Bank credits and checkable deposits and savings deposits and anything that you have in the bank and money market funds and, of course, credits of various kinds. And like bank credit. And of course, when you talk about M3, you're talking about the money supply in terms of the actual notes and coins, but you're also talking about credit that's available in the system. And yes, you're right. M3 was suddenly, they stopped publishing that because they didn't want people to know about large time deposits, institutional money market, mutual fund balances, euro dollars, and repurchase agreements, because that's where they're hiding a lot of the manipulation that's going into the current meltdown apocalypse.
But ordinarily, of course, your M3, your vibrant economy, the M3 is increasing. This is all the credit. It represents the loans by the banks where they actually create money out of nothing. It's not really money. It's credit. There's nothing behind it. It's simply a bookkeeping entry. But this is what fuels the economy. And if you want to destroy the economy, you contract credit. And they're not letting the American people know that the big banks and the small banks, too, the small banks because they're afraid to loan, the big banks because I think they're in on this scam, have actually contracted credit. So the M3, instead of expanding, has fallen and fallen dramatically. And that's what John Williams in Shadow Statistics points out, that the M3 is falling. Now, the government's, the Fed's putting out all sorts of money. How could you be putting out money and the M3 is falling? Why, very simply, because M3 is... has nothing to do with money. It has to do with credit, and the credit is contracting. They're pulling credit out so that you can't borrow money, and you don't get this multiplier effect, and they're shrinking the money supply. This is exactly what they did back in 1929, and the average American has no idea. Would you agree with that?
Oh, absolutely right. And as you mentioned, there, the other half of this is the quantitative easing that economies around the world have engaged in for the last couple of years, in which America apparently is going to continue, with the Federal Reserve talking about buying trillions in bonds and securities. And yes, absolutely, they're printing this money out of nothing, and they're also at the same time contracting the amount of credit available, and that's a formula for disaster, basically.
You're
that's
absolutely
exactly what we're heading towards.
Well, my telephone number, do you mind taking calls if anybody would like to call?
Absolutely, yeah.
All right, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464, if you have any questions for James. Do you actually interview Bob Chapman, or do you actually include his material in your newsletter, in your report?
Actually, I do interview him on a monthly basis, and that interview is available for my website.
All right, fine. So you basically have a report. How come you're living over in Japan, do you mind if I ask?
No, not at all. About 6 years ago, I decided to come over here just for a year in order to teach English and just travel Asia and see a little bit. I'd never been to Asia before, so it seemed like a good way to do it. And I just fell in love with the country and really, really like living here. So I've been out here for 6 years now.
All right, fine. Well, it really is. My understanding is a very charming country. I've never been there. One of the countries I'd really love to go to see. So basically,
we'd love to have you here.
Maybe sometime. Unfortunately, when you do 5 hours of talk radio a day, it's pretty hard to get away. But of course, we're trying to get people educated so they understand that what we're being told. When President Obama says, I'm trying to get jobs for American people, we want jobs, what he really means is, we are going to destroy the economy, but I can't tell you foolish people that. We're going to destroy the economy because the real goal is a one-world government. We want to transfer jobs to other countries. We want to raise the living standards over there in China and India and lower the living standards in America, and that's the only way we can do it. But if we told the American people, why, they'd be furious. And I really believe that they are doing everything today to confuse the American people, and people look and see what's going on. So much of it just doesn't make sense unless you understand that they want to bring in the illegal immigrants to lower our wage standards and certainly impoverish the American people. They want to outsource our jobs. They want to send our industries overseas, our manufacturing overseas, our jobs overseas, our wealth overseas, to bankrupt this country. I mean, you just can't keep borrowing money indefinitely. And then, of course, we're giving money away to other countries, and we have to borrow the money to give away. And you ask, why would anybody want to do that? Well, if you wanted to destroy a nation, do you know a better way than to do it? Well, let's go to John. John's calling us from, of all places, your old home there. James, John's calling from Canada. What part of Canada are you calling from, John?
Well, actually, I'm calling from Spokane.
Okay, fine. Go ahead.
They misunderstood what I said.
All right, fine. Do you have a question for our guest?
Yes. I have heard, read, that the Canadian banking system is a very sound system, one of the best in the world, and they didn't give up their safeguards like we did in 1999. And so I'm wondering, how independent of the American banking system is the Canadian system? And also, how do you explain the exchange rate with the Japanese yen now down to 85 per dollar?
That's an excellent question, and a very difficult one to answer. But yes, Canada, apparently the banking system there did survive the apocalypse more so than America, but why that is requires a little bit of digging into, I think.
All right.
Do you have time to go through that?
I think, let me just point out, John, if you go to trilateral.org, trilateral.org is the website, and simply the place there, you can get the membership list of the Trilateral Commission. You send them an email, they'll email it back to you. You'll find that the president of the Bank of Canada, your central bank, just happens to be one of the 87 members of the Trilateral Commission. John, they're all in on this, and when this whole thing comes down, Canada's better safe than America is, but we're all going to go down together.
So did your guest say that the Canadian system and the American system are pretty well tied together?
What are your thoughts on that?
Yes, they are in so many ways. But I think the Canadian system is fundamentally different because the Bank of Canada.
Gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mine supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188.
Well, many men begin having prostate symptoms when they get to be 60 years of age, so Radio Liberty is offering a great product. It's called Prostate Support. It's put together by one of the country's leading health food manufacturers. It contains ingredients which have been proven to work. I know health experts who take the product, and I use it as well, and I think that really is very effective. In addition, we have a product for women during that difficult time of life. It's called Menopause Support. And lastly, we have a product for people who have chronic difficulty with their immune system and nothing else seems to work. It's called Immune Support. All are available by calling 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. These products are compiled by a very reliable company. Give us a call, 1-800-544-8927.
Did you know that there's an increasing amount of scientific data which says that fluoride in drinking water is dangerous? Are you aware that your drinking water may in fact contain many unhealthy substances, even things which can cause sickness or disease? If you'd like information on how to remove these contaminants, find out about the Berkey water filter. You can call 800-544-8927 for complete information. There is a way to return to having pure, safe drinking water. The Berkey water filter. Call 800-544-8927 for information about a product that could protect you and your family from waterborne disease. The number to call is 800-544-8927. Call today.
In these times of falling values, high unemployment, loss of income, and with hyperinflation on its way, we have created a one-ounce silver coin with a cross and the words of John 3:16 on one side and the American Eagle on the other. These coins are mural finished, 0.999 silver. Each of these beautiful coins will always have an earthly store of value plus the cross with John 3:16 as an eternal value. Go to www.john316coin.com and call 1-877-316-COIN while supplies last. Order these beautiful 1-ounce John 316 American Eagle coins today by going to john316coin.com and calling 1-877-316-COIN.
That they owe to the banking system, and send to your local community. You know, maybe they have to borrow money for a school, they have to borrow money for a water plant, something like that. Where does the money come from? Well, the banks create it out of nothing, and then, of course, you have to pay the interest to your local community so they can pay it to the banks. It is a scam, ladies and gentlemen. As long as banks can create money out of nothing and leverage that, 10 to 1, 20 to 1, 30 to 1, 40 to 1, why, of course, they can make fabulous amounts of money. Everything is built upon debt, and certainly cities are in debt, schools are in debt, libraries in debt, sewer companies in debt. The counties are in debt, states are in debt, and they're head over heels in debt. Certainly we have our pension fund here in California, $500 billion in debt, and where's the money coming from? And of course, James is just saying that this could be corrected if we had politicians who are willing to stand up and say, this is a fraudulent system, you don't have any money, you created this credit out of nothing, based upon the idea that whatever you were lending your money on was the basis by which you created the money, and of course, we're just not going to pay the thing off, and you are going to have to come to a system that is legitimate and valid, and not, of course, totally fraudulent, by which you enslave the people to pay the interest of the bankers. Would that be a fair assessment, James?
That's exactly right, and I think that inevitably brings up the question of monetary reform and where we're headed from here and what kind of system we do actually want to set up, which is an extremely important question and one that I've been really trying to explore at the Corbett Report recently.
Well, what are your suggestions? What conclusions have you come to?
Well, I have not yet come to conclusions. All I can say is that there are extremely interesting and innovative ideas from a lot of different quarters, from people with slightly differing perspectives. And unfortunately, there has, I think, well, maybe fortunately, maybe unfortunately, I don't want to characterize it, but there has been a lot of rancor and discord between people who fundamentally agree that the system we're living in is untenable and is headed for disaster, but who disagree on the best way to get us out of it. And I guess some of the broad lines that you could draw is to talk about, of course, I'm sure many of your listeners are aware of Ron Paul, and probably through Ron Paul know about the Mises Institute and Austrian School of Economics that basically believes that gold is money and that everything would have to be backed up by either gold or silver or the combination in order to basically put the money that we're using on a sound footing again so that it's actually backed up by something. It's not being created out of thin air, which
of course, basically, of course, down through the ages, as we've had credit, and credit has allowed the economy to expand, but it has all been on a fraudulent basis. Now, there's probably nothing wrong with at least some credit. Certainly, initially, when the Federal Reserve Bank was set up, there was a 40% gold backing. The idea being everybody wouldn't come for the gold at one time, so you could have 60% of the money that the government had nothing behind it, but at least it was a system and it worked fairly well. Up until, of course, we had these the Great Depression. The problem was, of course, that now the government could create all sorts of money, and that was how they were able to finance the war. And when, of course, you can create money out of nothing, why, of course, then governments can have all sorts of wars and revolutions, and we can finance all sorts of terrible things throughout the world, all with fraudulent money. Whenever governments have money, it will be misused because men are basically sinful. At least that's my view. Well, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. If you'd like to talk to James Corbett, what do you think about the idea of establishing state banks owned by the state and upon which we pay no interest on the money, and the banks would be designed to actually provide the funds needed for the development within the state, but of course not to benefit a select class of people, which is the banks.
Right. Now, so that's the other side of the debate that I was drawing there, the Austrian school talking about the gold as money. But the other side is to say that, the creation of credit out of nothing is not in and of itself inherently evil. It's only who's in control of that system. And if that was under the control of, say, your state or local government, then that could be a good thing, and it could be used to empower and enrich the people, exactly as happened with colonial scrip in the years preceding the American Revolution, with probably the best example of that being in the Pennsylvania colony, where they were printing money out of nothing, and it was backed up theoretically by the land that people owned, but not really. And that system worked extremely well for about 60 years. And involved almost no inflation. So it was an extremely successful way of doing that, and I think it could be implemented again.
They tried this after the French Revolution. They backed their currency with the land that they'd seized from the Catholic Church. But the trouble is that everybody wanted to spend more and more money, and more and more money they spent, and then they had to print more and more money, and pretty soon they got into an inflationary spiral, and the whole system collapsed. We'll be back in a moment here.
Far across the sea.
This is Dr. Stan. Our guest is James Corbett, and he puts out the Corbett Report. And, of course, he has readers all over the world. And he's, of course, putting forth this concept, which I believe is very, very valid, that people who are in charge of our monetary system are really not trying to solve the problem. Basically, of course, what they're doing is transferring America's wealth and manufacturing and jobs overseas. We are outsourcing our jobs to India and other countries, or we are bringing in people who will work for less. And right now, of course, things aren't too bad. We've got a large number of people all unemployed, but after all, they get a check every month, unemployment check. They can get onto Medi-Cal, or they can get food stamps. They can get all the social benefits. So basically, they can get free medical care under Medicaid or one of the other programs. So there's really very little incentive to work. But how long can they keep doing this? How long can they keep spending money that we don't have? And we're having to borrow $4 to $5 billion every single day just to keep up for the welfare benefits so people won't be working. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think that that pretty much paints the picture pretty well there. I think that touches on the main points and issues that we're facing, that basically it isn't a completely untenable system and it is going to collapse at some point. In fact, there are many indications that the people who are really puppeteering this, the people in the positions of power in the trilaterals, as you mentioned, in the CFR, in Bilderberg, and other groups that are working behind the scenes of the geopolitical theater that we take for real politics, have in fact perhaps overcooked the pot a little bit and are actually out of control with this collapse, and it's basically inevitable now, and there are signs that the quantitative easing that the Fed is doing at the moment is designed to basically move things sideways for another year, perhaps another 2 years. They can continue to inject their fake money into the system and keep it afloat, but the question is just basically when it's going to collapse at this point, not if it's going to collapse. But I guess, again, fundamentally, that brings us to the point of what system do we want to see implemented. And I think a point that I want to make...
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan. I guess it's James Corbett, and he writes a report. I'm right now, would you like to give out your email or your website so people, if they'd like to get your information from you or even subscribe to your report, could do it?
Yes, of course. You can go to www.corbettreport.com. That's C-O-R-B-E-T-T report.com. And there you can find a contact form if you want to get in touch with me. You can see my videos, my articles, my podcast episodes, listen to my interviews. So it's all there and available for anyone who's interested.
And I will tell you, I was really fascinated when I read some of James's material. I think he has a very good grasp of what's going on, far better than so many of the people who write on this subject. Well, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295 if you have a question or comment. But you were beginning to say, the question is, what sort of system are we going to go to? Because this one we have is going to collapse. I fear that most of the people who are doing the traditional things, they're investing in annuities, they're putting their money into stocks or into bonds or, all the usual things that people do, keeping it in the bank, where it'll be safe and backed by the full faith and credit of the American government. Of course, I have very little faith in the American government and the credit. Even the Chinese are beginning to sell our bonds. They don't have much faith in the credit of the United States. So basically, what can people do to protect themselves? What is going to happen, James, in your opinion?
Well, at this point, it could either go into hyperinflationary debt spiral of the dollar, or we could have a deflationary depression. And again, there's a lot of debate about which way it's going to go. And at the moment, it's in the deflationary stage, but the hyperinflationary stage could kick in later, as others are suggesting. And I don't know which way it's going to go. I think that's a very complicated debate, and people who are much better studied than I have had that debate. But either way it goes, I think you ultimately can't really beat gold as just a storage of value, or silver on a personal level. I would say that's a much better investment to make than just storing it in a bank or trying to invest in the stock market or something at this point. I think that's obviously a system that's doomed to fail at some point or other. And it's absolutely true that for gold, for example, an ounce of gold, 2,000 years ago would buy basically the same items as it would today. You know, today a finely tailored suit, back in the day it would have been, you know, whatever clothing was accepted at the time, but at the same, you know, it stores that value, so I think you can't really knock that on an individual level. On the societal level, I think the important debate to have is whether we want to do the gold as money store of value sound money route or not, and I think there's been a lot of rancor between the two sides of that debate, because there are those who argue that if we took the money back into the hands of government, then government would obviously overprint and it would cause hyperinflation and everything would go you know, to hell in a handbasket anyway. But I think the fundamental question is that one about control and power, and I think obviously there has been an attempt to corner the gold market over the last several decades at least, if not hundreds of years, and I think a lot of gold right now is in the hands of those people who are already in control of the system. So I'm not sure returning to a gold-backed system would be a silver bullet solution, so to speak, to the problems we're facing. And on the other side of the argument, I do see the idea of bringing control of money back into the government being obviously prone to the same problems, because we know that government is largely bought and paid for by special interest corporations and bankers. So unfortunately, I don't think there is a silver bullet solution, and I don't think there is one way that we're going to solve all the problems. I think whatever way we choose to implement, it's going to take absolute vigilant guard of our system and the store of value of our money by the people, an informed public. And that's why, coming back to what you said earlier, it's so important that that they try to make economics sound boring, they try to put all this jargon on top of it, they try to confuse the public, because if the public ever understood the system they're living in, there'd be no choice but to revolt against it. So I think in that regard, probably the best thing that we could be doing is trying to get this debate more out into the public sphere.
Well, that's why I do what I do. Well, I'm sure that's why you do what you do. I think it's so interesting. They love to have all of these terms, which the average person can't understand. But, of course, the average person doesn't want to admit that they don't know what they're talking about. They use the terms CDOs or MBSs. And then, of course, we have quantitative easing and we have monetization. And of course, these have specific meanings. I mean, the CBOs, collateralized debt obligations, those are the bonds that they put into, these are mortgages they put into bonds, mortgage-backed securities, basically the same sort of thing. They create these bonds and then they sold them all over the world, and about 60% of them were sold in Europe. And that is, of course, why Europe is having all the problems. They brought all the fraudulent bonds, AAA rated here in the United States. The rating companies lied. They had the derivatives on them, and of course they didn't. The derivatives certainly have never paid off, and banks all throughout the world are beginning to just collapse simply because they trusted Goldman Sachs and they trusted J.P. Morgan Chase and all the big trilateral commission banks here in the United States working together as a cabal to destroy the world monetary system, and they sure did a good job of it. Quantitative easing, I'm sure. Could you explain what quantitative easing is for our listeners out there who hear the term and probably they just don't want to come out and say, I don't know what they're talking about?
Well, that refers to the flooding of, in the American economy's case, trillions of dollars of useless pieces of paper that we sometimes refer to as money into the system, and basically washing the system in this fiat funny money in order to convince people that there is still money in the economy, whereas, as you point out, the credit is being dried up, which is really the lifeblood of the economy and represents the vast majority of the money that's in the economy. So decreasing credit is probably the best sign that we're heading into very serious economic times. But the quantitative easing is just basically injecting money into the system in a way of basically keeping it afloat and greasing the skids of commerce enough that this depression doesn't completely collapse like it did in 1929.
And monetization is pretty much the same thing. They create these terms to confuse the common people so that the common people won't understand what they're really up to. What they're really up to, of course, is the process of destroying our economy so that they can suddenly profit personally and enslave the people, lower our living standards, and move us towards a feudalistic system of society. By violating our Constitution, these people are subversive. But nobody wants to call them that. But that's the truth of what this is really about. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295 here in the Central Coast of California, 464-8295 if you have a question on these subjects, because it's vitally important that people understand what's happening, and as James said, and I think he's absolutely right, with all the quantitative easing, they'll put out probably $2, maybe $4 or $5 trillion. They'll just create it out of nothing, and it'll keep the economy going, but it won't get it improving, because the only way you do that is to expand the credit. And they're not going to expand the credit. They're going to lower the living standards here in the United States, and more companies are going to shut down, and more people are going to lose their jobs, and more factories are going to be moving overseas. And the price of electricity and water and natural gas and the things that we have, you know, that make life pleasant, the prices are going to go up. This is all part of the plan of lowering living standards. And there's not one person in 100, I think, that has any idea what's going on. I think James can see this probably much more clearly from the vantage point of being over in Japan than the average American who's here and seeing all the things going on today. Would you think that would be a fair appraisal?
Well, I think there are certainly ways in which being detached from actually being in the American system gives some perspective on it. And certainly I think being detached from American media, which I think we can agree to a large extent is basically bought and paid for by the very corporate interests that are tied to the banking interests that are puppeteering the system. So there's definitely some advantage to being a little bit detached from it. But at the same time, of course, I'm not living the day-to-day experience, so I miss out on that aspect of it, which, of course, is filled in by other commentators. And I think it'll just take, you know, I wouldn't ask anyone to trust me as the sole authoritative source on this subject, but I think we can come to a better understanding by seeing it from a lot of different vantage points.
Well, I think it's very interesting if we look at gold. Gold is just, I mean, it's just taken off. It's up to almost $1,300, I think, some of the future contracts. $1,300 an ounce. I remember when gold sold for $35 an ounce here, and it was not that long ago. Well, maybe it was quite a while ago, but certainly within, I suppose back in the late 1960s, selling at $35 an ounce. Today it's $1,300 an ounce. Silver, there's $21.30 an ounce, I think, today, $21.30 an ounce. So gold and silver seem to be taking off. Why do you think that the price is going up as rapidly as it is?
Well, again, it's not that gold and silver are any inherently more valuable than they were 50 years ago. It's that the dollars that we keep in our pockets are less valuable. And I think that's obviously why gold and silver has always been, the price of gold really has always been a bellwether for the dollar and how it's doing, which is why there's so much manipulation of the gold markets, especially the gold certificates and you know, ways of keeping track of gold, which aren't actually physical gold, have always been extremely manipulated. And we saw that earlier this year with a whistleblower coming out talking about the manipulation of the silver and the metals markets at J.P. Morgan. And he suffered a car crash just a week or so after coming out with that story. And it was a very suspicious incident, and people can find out more about that through the Gold Action Trust Association. I can't remember the exact name, but the acronym is GATA, GATA.org, and they were talking with that whistleblower, and it was some extremely interesting information, and it's just another sign that the price of gold and silver is so important to keep suppressed, because it shows to the, even to the not well-educated public, that there is something seriously wrong with the dollar.
I really think that people all over the world now are beginning to turn to gold. I think that people realize that the whole world financial system is going to come down, and if it does, I mean, suddenly, how are you going to invest your money? How are you going to invest your life savings? You know, suddenly the government's talking about taking over the 401k and the IRAs, but most of them are invested in stocks or bonds, and even if the government doesn't get them and put them into annuities tied to the dollar, and of course you can be sure that the government will never pay those things off anymore. They've got to pay Social Security, Medicare. They just can't afford to. They're just trying to get enough money to keep going for another couple of years before the whole thing collapses. But I think people, you know, looking around, they're looking, where can I put my money? Where it will at least maintain some value. One only has to really study what happened in Zimbabwe under American tutelage there. We installed Mugabe there in Rhodesia. They've changed the name to Zimbabwe, but that doesn't change the fact that it was brought to power by American State Department, kept in power by the American State Department, and they systematically destroyed the value of the currency to the point where, when I lived in Africa, that the Rhodesian dollar was three American dollars to one Rhodesian dollar. Just before they suspended the use of the Rhodesian dollar, it was about one American dollar to a trillion Rhodesian dollars. And anybody, of course, who had their money there, they were simply impoverished. The only people who are doing well are the people who work for the government, subsidized by the American State Department, American taxpayers. And I think it was just sort of an experiment to see what happens when you destroy the currency of a first world nation. And I think they were totally successful, probably much more successful than they anticipated. They've totally destroyed that nation. And thanks, of course, to the policies put forward by Henry Kissinger and his friends within the Council on Foreign Relations and Trilateral Commission. So basically, you know, James has said we're even going to have certainly a depression or hyperinflation. What do you think it's going to be?
At this point, it's trending towards deflationary depression. I think, obviously, if the trillions and trillions and trillions of dollars that are being pumped into the bank's coffers at the moment ever does start coming out in terms of credit, then that will cause the hyperinflationary debt spiral. So, unfortunately, we're in kind of a rock and a hard place position where there either way that we move within this system, it's going to collapse on us, and it's just a question of, do you want a long, slow, drawn-out, painful, deflationary debt spiral, or do you want a very quick and very painful hyperinflationary debt spiral? And I don't think either way is going to be beneficial for people. And I think you're right. Unfortunately, we have seen some examples of this, like in Zimbabwe or even in Argentina, but it's important to understand that there have been examples of how people can survive these types of collapses. And in the Argentinian example, when the currency was collapsing there, again, with a lot of American intervention, there was something akin to the colonial scrip system instituted, where local governments were issuing their own currencies out of nothing and keeping the economy afloat, and people were trading them as if they were money. And it did really actually help to keep the economy afloat, at least for the few years until they could get on something more of a sound economic footing. But I think we have to look to examples like that to understand how such a collapse might affect us and what some of the possibilities might be. And instead of just promoting gold, which I think on a personal level, of course, is a good store of value for the money you might have in your bank account right now, but on a community level, I think it's extremely important for people to start setting up the institutions and organizations which might be able to sustain you in a type of sustained collapse. And we're talking here about bargaining with the setting up a barter exchange within your local neighborhood, or setting up a community currency, which might at this point not obviously be enough to really make an economy possible. But at some future point, if the rug is pulled out, or when the rug is pulled out, will allow people to survive in their community level and hopefully still maintain their community even after the collapse.
Well, Jesse, my understanding is that there are some communities here in our country that already do have community currencies, and you know this seems to stimulate local buying and selling. I mean, I don't know how many there are, where they are, but I've certainly heard stories about communities that have set up their own currency. Certainly it's not good outside the currency, but within the community, it works within the community, and it is functioning at least on a limited basis in several communities across America today. Perhaps somebody out there in the audience have heard about this, but I'm sure it is functioning. I think it's a good idea for people to start looking ahead and wondering, what's going to happen when the whole house of cards comes tumbling down? I think that's a very good thought. Any other thoughts that you would have for the average individual out there at the present time? Because people, you know, they've spent their whole lives, they've worked, they've put aside a nest egg, they intend to be able to retire on it. But if you destroy the value of the currency, or certainly devalue it markedly down to 20 or 30 cents on the dollar, well, these people are not going to be able to survive, and certainly there's no way the Social Security is going to survive. Social Security is bankrupt. We've got about 54 million people on Social Security now. There's going to be another 70 to 75 million baby boomers retiring over the next 25 years. Where's the money coming from? Their Social Security and their Medicare.
Well, yes, unfortunately, people have been trained to think that they're actually paying into a system and it's going into some account somewhere and they'll get it back when they retire. But, of course, we know that's not true. We know that current accounts are being paid by the people who are currently paying in. And absolutely, the system is going to collapse. So I think people have to be aware of that. But on the community issue, I think it's so important for people to start getting a little bit more involved in with their community and even starting things like community gardens and things, which will be able to, once again, hopefully resist whatever happens during the collapse.
And I certainly think the idea of the certainly at least beginning to think along these lines and beginning to try to get people into positions of authority in the local community who would be...
Heart disease is on the rise. Clogged arteries, high blood pressure, and high cholesterol levels may not be fully detected by you, but the symptoms are there. Loss of energy, blood sugar spikes and drops, poor circulation, and irregular heartbeat are just a few of these that can alert you that something is wrong. Hear how Heart and Body Extract is making a difference in thousands of people's lives across America.
My blood pressure has normalized. My diabetes has totally improved.
Everyone is telling me now how much healthier I look. I'm telling everyone how much healthier I feel. I recommend Heart and Body Extract to everyone.
Anybody over 40 in the North American continent should be using this product as a preventative to keep their cardiovascular system healthy.
Order your two-month supply today by calling 866-295-5305. That's 866-295-5305. Or order online, hbextract.com. Heart and Body Extract, 866-295-5305 or hbextract.com.
You may be new to freeze-dried foods. You may have storable food questions. You may want to buy your freeze-dried foods from a very reputable company and not go broke in the process. Welcome to the Freeze-Dry Guy. Okay, actually, we're more than just one guy. We're a California-based company that's been serving our U.S. military and other government agencies with the finest in freeze-dried storable foods and emergency rations since 1970. See all about us at freezedryguy.com. With Freeze-Dry Guy freeze-dried foods, you can and will be ready for just about any unexpected crisis. Freeze-dried guy foods are delicious, require little preparation, and will taste just as fresh decades from now as they do today. Just add hot water and serve. Backpackers consistently rate us number one year after year as the best tasting and ease of preparation. Isn't that what you want for your family? Visit freezedryguy.com or call 866-404-FOOD. That's 866-404-3663 or go to freezedryguy.com. Freeze-Dry Guy, the best you can buy.
Where are my car keys? What did I come in this room for? Where did I put that?
A common condition called age-related memory loss is robbing millions of people of their ability to remember and think clearly. And Alzheimer's and Parkinson's are occurring at younger ages, even early 20s and 30s. And there's much evidence that brain inflammation may be the cause. Brain inflammation may also cause depression and insomnia. But there's great news. Studies show by taking special, powerful nutrients, brain inflammation and its damaging effects may be greatly reduced. And that's why neurosurgeon Dr. Russell Blaylock created his brain repair formula to reduce brain inflammation and maintain a healthy brain. So, for a free book on brain health or information on Dr. Blaylock's special brain repair formula, call 1-800-SPECIAL or visit 1-800-SPECIAL.com.
An excellent, certainly, overview of what's going on. Certainly, far better than anybody else I've heard.
Well, it's an honor to be on your program, and I'd be happy to come on anytime.
God bless. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Okay, fine. Well, that was James Corbett, and certainly, you certainly has the Corbett Report, and you can certainly look it up on the Internet now. This is the time when I need to remind our listeners that Radio Liberty is primarily a listener supporter. We have a few advertisers. We'd like a lot more. If you know anybody who'd like to advertise on a conservative radio network, why, we do have an excellent relationship with our advertisers, and they all do very well. But since it doesn't come anywhere near meeting our expenses, if you're in a position to help, we'd love to hear from you. Our telephone number, 800-544-8927. And then, of course, I want to mention we do carry Professor Quigley's book. We just got in a supply of Scarlet and the Beast, The Story of Masons. This is Volume 1. The book's been selling for $175. You can look at it on Amazon. The book is $175. We're offering it for $49.95. If you'd like to get a copy of Scarlet and the Beast, Volume Number 1, an excellent overview of masonry. People have wanted it through the years, but they didn't want to put out a ridiculous sum of money, and so we were, well, oh, I won't tell you how we managed to be able to get to carry this. Now, we do have Volume 2 and Volume 3. And it simply takes you into the secret world of masonry and what their ideas and concepts are and what they're going. And then, of course, we want to remind you, we're having an all-day conference. It's going to be on the 17th of October. We're bringing in speakers from across the country, Dr. Paul Williams, the nation's expert on Islamic terrorist training camps, is going to be with us. And, of course, there are Islamic terrorist training camps here. You'll actually see the pictures of them, but of course you're not supposed to know about it. The government knows about it, and for some reason, some very strange reason, they won't do anything about these training camps that are recruiting people to go to Afghanistan to fight and kill American soldiers. Why wouldn't you do something about that? Well, you're going to be fascinated to hear Dr. Paul Williams talk. Dr. David Ayoub will be here. Sheriff Mack will be here. Our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. You're going to need a reservation because we're going to be serving lunch, and we've got about a couple of weeks now before we have to let them know how many people are coming. So if you're thinking about coming, try to find a friend or a couple of friends. The most important thing you can do for people is to educate them about what is really going on today. So again, our number, 1-800-544-8927. Now, of course, you need to read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness. You need to actually get a talk on the planned police state, on planned population reduction, on none there, call it genocide. And if you get any of the the products from us, and you'd like a copy of my treatise on the population control agenda, why, give us a call. We'll be glad, of course, to get you a copy of that without charge. But it's an important treatise. It's 10 years old. One of these days we'll update it. But you must understand there really is a genocidal program to kill off most of the people in the world. Why do you think the fertility rate of this last year was lower than it's been in 20 years? Why do you think the male sperm count fell 50% in the last 20 years? Why do you think that so many men have sexual dysfunction today? Do you think all these things are happening? Why do we have an explosion of Alzheimer's disease and dementia? Why do we have an explosion of autism and allergies and Sydney, asthma in our children? Well, Sydney, you want to get my talk on the specter haunting America. The specter haunting America. Again, our number, 1-800-544-8927. Our webpage, radioliberty.com. Go there. You can listen to our programs 9 hours a day. And you can even listen, if you have a phone, you can listen 24 hours a day to our Genesis programs. And then please pray for America. But pray for Radio Liberty, our provision and protection. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, that illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views. And, well, for the next hour, they're going to be the views of our good friend William Grigg. And William was formerly the senior editor of the New American Magazine. And now he has his own blog. He has his own radio program. And, well, we look forward to talking with him every Friday at this time. Hi, William. How are you doing?
Dr. Stan, I'm doing great. Thank you once again for having me as a guest on your program.
You're more than welcome. It's always a pleasure. So what are we going to talk about tonight?
Dr. Stan, we have to talk about the subject of Homeland Security Theater. That's the phrase which has been coined by Lou Rockwell of the Ludwig von Mises Institute to describe this apparently endless parade of prefabricated scare stories about domestic terrorism and related issues that were being fed by the state-aligned media. And the most recent example of that, actually there are two examples, I think they're connected, but the most recent example was a series of search warrants that were executed today in Minnesota, in St. Paul, Minnesota, and in Chicago, having to do with what was described as an ongoing investigation into alleged connections between domestic leftist groups and various foreign terrorist organizations, or FTOs. According to the St. Paul newspaper, Pioneer Press, there were six search warrants in Minneapolis that were executed this morning, and this included homes of several political activists who were associated with some of the left-wing groups that staged demonstrations during the Republican National Convention back in 2008. Now, I think that's significant, Dr. Stan, because during both political conventions in 2008, and I've mentioned this before, we saw really an unprecedented militarization of law enforcement and a commingling not only of the military and local police, state police, and other civilian law enforcement agencies, but also the introduction of almost a counterterrorism model of crowd control and event management, where if you were considered to be a member of a dissident group that could be a disruptive influence, irrespective of whether you're going to be protesting, petitioning for redress of grievances through public protest, or conducting acts of vandalism or other acts of mayhem, you are lumped into one group and kept under surveillance and subject to preemptive arrests. There were preemptive arrests in Minneapolis and St. Paul before the Republican National Convention. There were similar preemptive arrests that were taken, that were undertaken in anticipation of the Democratic Convention in Denver. And in both instances, you had riot gear-clad police that were really kitted out like stormtroopers from Star Wars. The difference is they were wearing black rather than white, who would essentially arrest entire blocks of people for no discernible reason. Just as a matter of preemptive crowd control, it really was a garrison state model that was deployed both in the Twin Cities and in Denver. And the thing I find most disturbing is that the National Guard, which has been federalized almost entirely since 2006, is no longer in any way the select militia, the constitutional militia of the 50 discrete states. Now it's pretty much the presidential plaything. But the National Guard was deployed in both Minneapolis, St. Paul, and in Denver. And particularly with respect to what happened in the Twin Cities, this was undertaken as a domestic military deployment in the same language and using the same tactics that they would employ in Iraq or Afghanistan to manage people whom they consider to be unruly. What happened today, I think, is an outgrowth of that same model.
Well, I think that we have to be very, very concerned, because there are people at in the Obama administration don't believe in the Constitution. They want an authoritarian system of government. They want a government that can regulate and control and intimidate the people, intimidate them into accepting whatever is done in the name of being protected against terrorism, or whatever that means. You know, terror is a tactic. But of course, it's almost as if we've designed the whole of our structure of society now to fight terrorism. William, go right ahead.
And even more importantly, when you're talking about the idea of designing the whole society, this whole garrison state mentality, on the pretext of protecting us from terrorism. Even more importantly than this, we're dealing with the redefinition of terrorism to include pretty much any organized dissent, anything that is considered to be ideologically extremist, whether you're talking about the groups who are the subject of these crackdowns today, who seem to be almost comically, stereotypically caricatures of campus Stalinism. If you take a look at their literature, there's nothing there that really would engender the support or sympathy of people who understand the singularly bloody history of totalitarian socialism over the last 100 years, 150 years or so. They seem to go out of their way, and this is one of the reasons why I think we're taking a look at something that is best described as a species of melodrama rather than news. If you take a look at their literature and the way that they posture, it's almost as if they're playing a role scripted for them. That's not to say that everybody who's attached to that group would fit that description. The people who are on the receiving end of SWAT raids, for instance, in Minneapolis this morning, this included a young mother and a six-year-old daughter who was horrified when these people decked out as military operators and wielding semi-automatic rifles used a battering ram to knock down their door at 7 in the morning. I don't think that necessarily that young mother, and certainly the six-year-old child, wouldn't have been consciously playing a role, but the people running the groups and funding the groups might have a different perspective. But you take a look at the way this is being presented to the public, these people are considered potential terrorists because of their political views, because they're radical critics of the existing power structure. Now, as it happens, my belief is that people on the far fringes of the left, people who are in groups that are funded by our good friends in the tax-exempt foundation world, they're people who are not necessarily at loggerheads or in diametric opposition to the establishment. I mean, it seems to me that the people running the establishment have very similar goals to those of professed totalitarian socialists, but they would be willing to use people at the street level, I think, as disposable assets, if you will, as shock troops, as people who are involved in street theater and so forth. And there seems to be an interest in making sure that there is an abundant supply of people of that sort who could be used in exercises like today's raids, which were really carried out for the purpose of propaganda. Here's what the FBI had to say. The Joint Terrorism Task Force in Chicago apparently managed to get a federal judge in Minnesota to sign off on search warrants for people who were associated with...
Hold that thought. Right. We'll be back in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and William was just saying that the FBI got a judge in Minnesota to sign off on a search warrant. Now, this supposedly, these people participated in the demonstrations 2 years ago.
Yeah.
But, of course, what they're trying to do is give you the idea, oh, there's a threat of domestic terrorism, and political dissent is not terrorism at all. I mean, terrorism is a technique that is used today by the Islamists, and, of course, it has been used sometimes by people on the left in the past. But, certainly, political dissent is not terrorism, but they try to lump it all together, and the next thing it'll be, well, if you don't like the Obama administration, you are a potential terrorist. And
yep.
They're really trying to create this idea that any opposition or anyone who dares to speak out against what's going on today or point out that both political parties are controlled by the same people or that certainly the Trilateral Commission, the Bilderbergers, the Council on Foreign Relations constitute an invisible government with perhaps 4,000 or 5,000 people who really do control most of the wealth and certainly most of the major means of communication in America. If you were to say that publicly, you could be a potential terrorist because you would be threatening the status quo. What was the FBI's justification for the raids this morning, Mark?
Well, the thing is, the Joint Terrorism Task Force, according to FBI Representative Stephen Warfield, was, and I quote now, seeking evidence related to an ongoing Joint Terrorism Task Force investigation into activities concerning the material support of terrorism, which, by the way, is so broadly defined and so amorphous in its substance that you really could find yourself being arraigned by a federal grand jury and then, of course, before a federal judge on criminal charges, a federal criminal prosecution, for doing something in the realm of charity that somehow ended up indirectly and by derivation supporting a group that has been labeled a terrorist organization by the United States government. You could have no mens rea, no criminal intent. You could not be in any way, shape, or form directly aiding people who were involved in the prosecution of terrorist activities against any government. And incidentally, nothing in the documents here alleges that there was a terrorist conspiracy against the United States, against the citizens of the United States, against the government of the United States, either the federal government or any of the states, or even against the assets of the United States military abroad. They're simply talking about support for organizations that have been designated foreign terrorist organizations of an unspecified nature. There is, according to FBI Special Agent Warfield, there is no imminent threat to the community, and we're not planning any arrests at this time. So why did they use a SWAT team? If you take a look at the way that this warrant was served, they literally deployed people kitted out like stormtroopers at daybreak in order to conduct a raid to enforce a warrant that had nothing to do with criminal charges or anything to do with an imminent threat to the community.
Then why would they break down the door? I mean, you would think they would ring the doorbell or knock on the door.
Sure.
Why would you break down the door?
Like I said, it's Homeland Security Theater. It makes for better television, or it makes a better impression on the public. This, once again, this is from the St. Paul Press. The warrants were executed at about 7 a.m., with six carried out in Minneapolis and two in Chicago. A SWAT team accompanied by the FBI knocked on Kelly's door. That's Mike Kelly, who is the lead subject of this investigation. At about 7 a.m., and Kelly's partner answered. They said they had a search warrant, according to the attorney for Michael Kelly. She asked to see it. She couldn't read it through the peephole, so they busted down the door. The door flew across the room and broke a fish tank. There are now, at this point, eight FBI agents in the apartment going through every piece of paper in there and all the books. Now, this is not what the Fourth Amendment authorizes by any stretch of the imagination. What the Fourth Amendment reads in totality is the following. The right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated, and no warrants shall issue but upon probable cause, supported by oath or affirmation, and particularly describing the place to be searched and the persons or things to be seized. Once again, no arrests were contemplated. There was no imminent threat. There were no exigent circumstances to justify this type of a high-profile and high-intensity raid. The SWAT team, of course, was utterly gratuitous. If you're not going in to arrest somebody or to interject an immediate plot, you don't need a paramilitary team there to do it. And furthermore, as I'm reading the search and seizure warrant here issued by the District Court for Minnesota, I'm struck by two things. First of which is very, very poorly edited, very slapdash. It's obviously something that was done in a hurry by somebody who wasn't paying careful attention. And the second thing is that the 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, just a second, six, seven clauses, excuse me, listed in this search and seizure warrant don't list anything specific with respect to a criminal act, an alleged criminal act, or something that would be the subject of probable cause. It requires documents, files, books, photographs, videos, souvenirs, war relics, notebooks, address books, diaries, journals, maps, or other evidence, including evidence in electronic form related to, and here are the categories, Michael Kelly's travel to and from and presence and activities in Minnesota and other foreign countries to which Kelly has traveled as part of his work in the so-called Freedom Road Socialist Organization, or FRSO. That's the left-wing group he belongs to. Kelly's ability to pay for his own travel from the United States to Palestine, Colombia, and travel within the United States from 2000 until present, including all materials related to Kelly's personal finances and finances of the Freedom Road Socialist Organization. That's the first clause. They're not describing a crime here. There's nothing in that description that involves a crime of any kind. Here's the second clause. Kelly's potential co-conspirators. Stop right there. Co-conspirators in what? There's no predicate there. This is an unsupported, as far as we can tell, unconnected and completely arbitrary imputation of conspiracy. In order for a criminal conspiracy to exist, Mr. Kelly would have to be allegedly working in combination with somebody else to achieve something that is forbidden by law. So far, they've not said that he's accused of anything or suspected of doing anything that would be forbidden by law. Kelly's potential co-conspirators, including any address books, lists, notes, photographs, videos, or letters of Kelly's personal contacts in the United States and abroad. Still, that's the second clause. Still, we don't see anything here that suggests that there was a crime involved. Here's the third one. And by the way, they, as I mentioned, this is very poorly edited. These are listed as A in alphabetical order. They omitted B. They went from A to C. Good enough for government work, I suppose. Here's clause D. The recruitment, indoctrination, and facilitation of other individuals in the United States to join FRSO, including materials related to the identity and location of recruiters, facilitators, and recruits, the means by which the recruits were recruited to join FRSO, the means by which the recruitment was financed and arranged. Still, we're waiting for something that's an alleged crime here. The next one, the recruitment, indoctrination, and facilitation of other individuals in the United States to travel to Colombia, Palestine, and any other foreign location in support of FTOs, that's foreign terrorist organizations, including but not limited to FARC, FARC, that's the left-wing narcotics and terrorist group in Colombia, PFLP, that's the Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine, and Hezbollah, including materials related to the identity and location of recruiters, facilitators, and recruits of these FTOs, the means by which individuals were recruited to travel to Colombia, Palestine, and other foreign locations in support of FTOs, and the means by which the recruitment was financed and arranged. That's the 1, 2, 3, fourth clause. Here's the fifth clause. FARC, PFLP, Hezbollah, which is misspelled in this document, by the way, and other FTOs to which or which the FRSO and Kelly have supported, attempted to support, or conspired to support. So far, the only allegation here is some unspecified accusation that they supported these groups, which could be rhetorical support, it could be moral support, it could be support in terms of agitation and propaganda. But you, in order to be guilty of making a material, of being materially involved in promoting terrorism, you have to talk about raising money, you have to talk about providing weapons, you have to talk about providing training. So far, we don't have any of that in this document. And this is the core. That's the guts of this so-called probable cause affidavit. So far, what we have here is a document which alleges that these people have traveled abroad, that this individual, Michael Kelly, has traveled abroad specifically, that he's been to places like Colombia and the occupied West Bank and other places overseas. He's admitted that he's been to Lebanon. But they've not made an allegation here that he was involved in raising money for these foreign terrorist organizations, that he was involved in recruiting guerrillas or cadres for these terrorist organizations, that he was in any way providing them with material support. He and his organization do support these groups in their ideological commitment to what they consider to be global revolution, which, of course, is an abhorrent thing. These are organizations that are murderous. They're promoting a view of, for the most part, they're promoting a view of the world that would be Marxist-Leninist in nature and sometimes Stalinist in their outlook, which is why a group that professes to be Stalinist would support them. It's not a crime to support an abhorrent ideology. It's not a crime to express support for a group who, if they were to come to power, would do terrible things to countries such as Colombia and Lebanon, etc. It's a bad thing. It's an immoral thing. It doesn't have to be illegal. And so far, there's nothing in this document, and that's pretty much the guts of it, as I said, that would suggest that there was a crime involved here. And if this guy was actually involved and actively involved in promoting these groups in terms of providing a conduit for money and arms and other means to commit mayhem abroad, I rather doubt that they would leave him free on his own recognizance. Although they have subpoenaed him to testify before a grand jury in Chicago. But as I said, this whole thing just reeks of scripted kabuki theater type drama, which is being presented in order to tune the public mind to expect an ever-growing domestic terrorist menace for the purposes of domestic politics.
Well, unfortunately, why they have to convince us that the government is protecting us from the wicked terrorists. The only problem is that so many of these terrorist organizations are actually indirectly funded by our own intelligence agencies. And if you go into the background of the whole world terrorist movement, why, of course, why you'll find so much of it's funded by the CIA, you need to get the book The Devil's Game. The Devil's Game and the book going in the background of See No Evil by Robert Baer. We carry both of them. You need to understand what's really going on behind the scenes. Go right ahead, William.
I heartily.
Gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mine supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188.
Well, many men begin having prostate symptoms when they get to be 60 years of age, so Radio Liberty is offering a great product. It's called Prostate Support. It's put together by one of the country's leading health food manufacturers. It contains ingredients which have been proven to work. I know health experts who take the product, and I use it as well, and I think that really is very effective. In addition, we have a product for women during that difficult time of life. It's called Menopause Support. And lastly, we have a product for people who have chronic difficulty with their immune system and nothing else seems to work. It's called Immune Support. All are available by calling 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. These products are compiled by a very reliable company. Give us a call, 1-800-544-8927.
Did you know that there's an increasing amount of scientific data which says that fluoride in drinking water is dangerous? Are you aware that your drinking water may in fact contain many unhealthy substances, even things which can cause sickness or disease? If you'd like information on how to remove these contaminants, find out about the Berkey water filter. You can call 800-544-8927 for complete information. There is a way to return to having pure, safe drinking water. The Berkey water filter. Call 800-544-8927 for information about a product that could protect you and your family from waterborne disease. The number to call is 800-544-8927. Call today.
In these times of falling values, high unemployment, loss of income, and with hyperinflation on its way, we have created a one-ounce silver coin with a cross and the words of John 3:16 on one side and the American Eagle on the other. These coins are mural finished, 0.999 silver. Each of these beautiful coins will always have an earthly store of value plus the cross with John 3:16 as an eternal value. Go to www.john316coin.com and call 1-877-316-COIN while supplies last. Order these beautiful 1-ounce John 316 American Eagle coins today by going to john316coin.com and calling 1-877-316-COIN.
That we all ought to be involved with the anti-war movement, but if you are, you will be targeted, and they searched your home. Did they take things from the home, do we know?
Yes, they took out several large staples boxes of everything that was written or recorded, everything that was either kept on paper or in some kind of electronic storage medium, media such as DVDs and flash drives and computer hard drives. They pretty much trashed the place. Once again, you're talking about a raid that involved battering down a door with a battering ram, a residential apartment. You didn't have any indication that these people were capable of or inclined toward violence. They went in, they scooped up everything, they trashed the home, but they didn't arrest anybody. Once again, if you're dealing with a criminal probe, that's largely a clerical exercise here, because if you look at the warrant, you're talking about paperwork. You're talking about paperwork issues. You're not talking about confiscating weapons of mass destruction or weapons of limited destruction. You're not talking about confiscating the component elements of something that could be assembled into a weapon. You're talking about seizing files of various kinds. And they pretty much vacuumed up everything that could be carted away, everything that had writing or anything that contained electronic information. And that defies, incidentally, the logic of the Fourth Amendment. The Fourth Amendment authorizes specific searches. A reasonable search is one that is backed by specific oath or affirmation as to particular things that are to be taken and particular reasons why you're taking this thing. This is of the nature of the general warrants that were issued during the 1760s and 1770s, during the conflicts that emerged after the French and Indian War, when the British Ministry for the Americas, in the name pretty much of what we would now call counterterrorism, began to tighten its grip on commerce and related activities here in the American colonies. One of the reasons why the Fourth Amendment was demanded by the Anti-Federalists as a condition of ratifying the Constitution was they remembered what happened when a executive agency, in this case the people who are enforcing the British Ministry for the Americas' whims, when they had the supposed authority simply to authorize a general search of people who were suspected to be up to no good. The Fourth Amendment requires that a judge, before issuing a permission slip to the bully boy enforcers of the government, will get specific documented information, that is to say, either affirmation or oath or affirmation testimony, which is offered under penalty of perjury, or some kind of material evidence to justify suspicions that will permit a specific thing to be seized. This warrant basically authorized, supposedly, I don't think it authorized anything, this warrant was supposed authorization for the FBI to take everything they possibly could from the home that was targeted here. They're just on a fishing expedition. They're taking a large trawling net and going through this guy's life because he's a very attractive target as somebody who's at the hintermost fringe of the Marxist left in this country. He doesn't have a whole lot of sympathy. He doesn't have a very high Q rating, if you will, in terms of his appeal to the public at large, and so he's a perfect candidate for this type of harassment. But in the case of doing so, you've got this woman and a six-year-old daughter who are terrorized, literally terrorized by an event that could have been out of Brezhnev's Soviet Union. What happened, particularly in the 60s and 70s, when they were dealing with their dissidents, and many of the dissidents in the Soviet Union, this isn't a very well-understood fact, many of the political dissidents of the Soviet Union were left-wing critics of that regime. They didn't understand, or maybe they did understand and they were too ideologically committed to their views to recognize and admit the fact that socialism, when perfectly and faithfully carried out, resembles nothing so much as one large corporation. It's a corporation that has coercive power, and you have people who are favored by that government who prosper at the expense of others because of the way that their corrupt dealings are protected by the government. There were a lot of utopian left-wingers who didn't like what happened in the Soviet Union. They didn't think it was true socialism, so they criticized the regime from the left, and they were treated the same way as any other dissidents were treated. And we've got the same thing happening now in the post-constitutional United States. This is like the proverbial daylight raid of the KGB in Brezhnev's Soviet Union circa 1968.
Well, we'll be back here in just a moment with our special guest, William Grigg. And we're talking about, certainly, this excess activity of the government. The whole purpose is to intimidate and instill fear. Why else would you come, you know, and break down the door and come in with armed FBI officials? I mean, certainly one or two FBI officials, but eight of them, and brandishing weapons, semi-automatic weapons. This is all about instilling fear, ladies and gentlemen. All about instilling fear. Be great. Well, why don't you go right ahead?
Taking a look at the way that these warrants were carried out, particularly in Minnesota, once again, I'm struck by the way that this was calculated as an act of state terrorism, albeit one that, thank heavens, didn't involve actual bloodshed. This woman, Steph Yorick, who was basically terrorized at daybreak this morning with a six-year-old daughter, said, I opened the door with my six-year-old daughter and saw these armed men with battering rams. Yorick said the searches constitute harassment of people involved in anti-war and international solidarity work. International solidarity work generally refers to left-wing activism. She and some of the other people whose homes were searched are associated with the Freedom Road Socialist Organization. Freedom Road and Socialist, I think, are a pretty good one, put together a pretty good example of an oxymoron. I think this is about our opposition to U.S.-funded war and death squads in Colombia and our solidarity with Palestine, she said. But Yorick said she hadn't done anything wrong. We've absolutely done nothing wrong. We've done absolutely nothing that could be considered material support of terrorism. This is just harassment. Then Michael Kelly, who was the fellow whose name was on the affidavit and who's been subpoenaed by a federal grand jury in Chicago, has a very similar perspective. It's the attempt to, it's harassment at the highest level of those of us who have spoken out and tried to build an anti-war movement. It's an attempt to trample on our right to speak out against U.S. intervention abroad. It's outrageous on every level. They were looking for information about folks who had traveled to Latin America or the Middle East. I've traveled to Lebanon, said Mr. Kelly. He says that he has traveled to both Lebanon and Colombia, quote, in solidarity with people who are being oppressed. Now, of course, that's classic activism of a peaceful and entirely American variety. Not in terms of the content. I strenuously and in pretty much every particular disagree with this guy's ideology. But so far as we know, and so far as the documentation provided to the public demonstrates, this guy's never broken any law, never threatened to break any law. He's simply espousing views that are out of favor with most Americans, for good reason, not a favor.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back here in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and certainly our guest is William Grigg. We're talking about the FBI breaking into people's homes, coming in with SWAT teams and semi-automatic weapons into the homes of people where there's certainly no reason for having this show of violence, and it's all about intimidating people. Now, whether you agree with the people or not, and probably a lot of them are left-wing, foolish idealists who don't even understand they're being manipulated often by the very people they oppose. But be that as it may, why, if they can do it to them, they can do it to you. If they do not have adequate reasons, if they do not have an adequate search warrant, then they've violated the law. And the FBI are just as guilty of violating the law. And certainly, apparently, these people have not violated the law, at least not from what we've been able to learn. Well, before we go on, William, I want you to tell our listeners how they can get to your blog site, how they can listen to your radio programs, and hopefully how they can get to your PayPal button.
Appreciate that, Dr. Stan. My blog is called Pro Libertate. It can be found at freedominourtime.blogspot.com. freedominourtime.blogspot.com. Or you can type in my name, William Grigg, and Pro Libertate, and you'll probably find that that's the first return you get if you use any of the major search engines. Or just William N. Grigg, N as in Norman, as in William of Normandy, William N. Grigg. Just Google my name. Pro Libertate is almost certainly going to be the first return. I also post quite frequently at lewrockwell.com. He republishes a lot of my essays, and he also has me on the roster of people to contribute to the blog on that website. That's Lew Rockwell, lewrockwell.com. And I've also started to write for the Libertarian Standard as well. And you mentioned my radio program, Dr. Stan. It's broadcast every Saturday night from 8 o'clock to 11 o'clock Idaho time. That's Mountain Time, 8 o'clock to 11 o'clock p.m. each Saturday night on the Liberty News Radio Network. LibertyNewsRadio.com is the URL. The radio program is also called Pro Libertate. Liberty News Radio, I think, has got several score regional affiliates or local affiliates all across the country. And so if you go to libertynewsradio.com, you should be able to get a list of the affiliates. I'm sure appreciate any help that we can get in helping to expand our efforts. The radio program is also broadcast live over the Internet, and it's downloadable as a podcast as well, and the instructions for all that is at libertynewsradio.com. Dr. Stanley mentioned my website does have a PayPal account attached to it, and at the bottom of every essay, there is a button that people can use if they have access to PayPal. If they're interested in helping keep Pro Libertate online, I sure appreciate the help. That's pretty much what's been keeping us going over the last year and a half or so, and I am deeply and eternally grateful to you, Dr. Stan, and to the members of your audience who have been so generous to me and to my family. It's a challenge to provide for a family right now as we find ourselves careening into an economic abyss. It's a particularly stimulating challenge to be providing for a family of eight while doing what I do as an independent journalist, and it's because of the faithful and very generous contributions I've received from people like your wonderful audience that we've been able to do this. So once again, that's at freedominourtime.blogspot.com.
Well, we think it's important to keep you out there, William, because I think you have an excellent, certainly, approach to things, and I think you're certainly one of our most articulate spokesmen for the conservative cause. So pick up your story then, certainly of this effort to harass people. Now, whether we agree with them or not, well, it is not important. It's the principle of the thing and the fact that they would use these intimidation techniques on the people. Go ahead.
Yeah, that's exactly right. As I've said before, and I want to reiterate now, I don't think that there's much in the worldview of these people with which I would be sympathetic. I do agree with their critique of our foreign policy as imperial in nature rather than one suitable to a constitutional republic. I don't think that we should be involved in bellicose and arrogant interventions in other people's affairs overseas. That's not Marxism, that's Madisonianism, that's Jeffersonianism. The doctrine of our founding fathers is defined by George Washington and endorsed by people like Alexander Hamilton is one of non-intervention in the affairs of other people. And promoting our interests through commerce and promoting our ideological view of the world through the strength of our example, that's supposed to be the way that we wield political influence in the world. We're supposed to be in the business of doing business with people rather than pushing people around at the point of a bayonet or under the threat of bombing. And so to that extent, I think that irrespective of our political differences on the moral questions, Mr. Kelly and his group would likely be broadly aligned with me. To that extent, perhaps no further. But more importantly, we're talking about issues of individual liberty protected by the Constitution, protected by the Bill of Rights specifically. And the same Bill of Rights that is supposed to protect me, protects them. As a Christian constitutionalist, I believe that the second great commandment, that we love our neighbors like ourselves, requires that we speak up on behalf of the rights of those with whose political views we disagree, but whose rights are being trampled by a government that is a threat to everybody's rights. If I don't defend their rights, I really have no reasonable expectation that people would defend my rights as well. And so when I see people of this sort who've done nothing that I can tell that constitutes a crime of any sort against anybody, find themselves on the receiving end of a paramilitary raid at daybreak as part of an obvious and vulgar fishing expedition into their affairs, it strikes me as the sort of a thing that can only be described in the lexicon of the police state. There's just no way that in a constitutional republic with a Bill of Rights like the one with which we were blessed that this sort of thing would be conscionable. But that's not the only example, Dr. Stan, of what's going on in the realm of Homeland Security Theater. Here's another really good example. I wrote about this a couple of days ago on the LouRockwell.com blog. About a week and a half ago, we had headlines erupt about the supposed foiling of a terrorist plot in Chicago. There was a young man, I think he's 22 years old, by the name of Sami Samir Hassoun. He was born in Lebanon. He's a legal resident of the United States. I believe he was studying to become a physician. At least he had both the academic ability, the intellect, and the intent to become a doctor. He'd expressed interest in that line of work. He was supposedly found by the FBI preparing to conduct a number of bombings or terrorist acts in Chicago, and he had placed a knapsack containing a paint can that was said to have been turned into a high-yield explosive next to Chicago's Wrigley Field during a concert by the Dave Matthews Band. As it happens, the device he was given was a dummy. It wasn't a bomb. It was a facsimile of a bomb that had been constructed by two undercover FBI agents at Quantico in Virginia. Once again, Quantico is the training facility for the FBI's field agents. He was sent with this bomb, the supposed bomb, I believe it was on the 19th in Chicago, into this very densely populated part of Chicago. It's really, in particularly this time of year, it's very busy. And over the last year and a half or so, he had been influenced by an individual referred to as a cooperating witness, that is to say an informant, or to put matters as bluntly as necessary, a provocateur. The thing that I find interesting in reading the charging document here, the criminal complaint against Mr. Hassoun, is that the agent who swore out the complaint, I'm trying to find his name here, Special Agent Samuel Hartman, said that this young man first came to the attention of the FBI, and I'm quoting now from the document, in or about the spring of 2009. Now, at that time, the Bureau, when working through the Joint Terrorism Task Force, I think there are 15 of them in the country, decided to pair him up with a paid informant or a provocateur. Now, in the charging document, Special Agent Hartman says that this decision, the decision that is to try to arrange for Mr. Hassoun to come under the influence of this paid informant, was based on, and I quote, information relating to Hassoun that is unrelated to this matter. Now, I'm intrigued by that. Why is it that the FBI decided to pick out this obscure 21-year-old Lebanese immigrant who is here legally? He wasn't an illegal alien. He didn't have any criminal background. Why did they choose him? And I actually talked to his attorney today, and his attorney wasn't really interested in disclosing everything that he had been told, but from the conversation I got, from the conversation I had with his attorney, I got the impression that it doesn't make sense that the FBI chose this 21-year-old Lebanese immigrant because he wasn't doing anything that betokened an interest in terrorism. What I find interesting as well, if you read carefully not only the text of this criminal complaint, but the footnotes, it's the footnotes where you find the really interesting details, a portrait emerges of a young man who was a jerk. He's somebody who had some bizarre and unhealthy interest in causing trouble for political ends. But he wasn't a murderer. He wasn't violent. And most importantly, he wasn't religious. That's something I find really interesting as well. Rather than advancing the Islamist agenda, this young man, Hassoun, for some reason, wanted to bring down Mayor Daley. He just seemed to be obsessed with the idea of taking down Mayor Richard Daley, and what's really strange is that Daley is retiring. He's going out anyway. He's on his way out. He's going to retire. He's no longer going to be in office after the beginning of the year. So for some reason, he had conceived a real resentment against Mayor Daley, and he thought that the best way to do this, according to the conversations he had with the provocateur, would be to undermine confidence in Chicago's police and security agencies by conducting what I consider to be pranks rather than actual bombings or actual terrorist attacks. And the thing that I find really interesting as well is that rather than...
Well, no, why would you say this is a prank? If he thought this was a bomb, and if he left it in a place where it could certainly explode, and it had it gone off, this is not a prank. This is a dangerous thing to do.
Yes.
Certainly this man is obviously stupid, but he was enticed into doing it. Now, I believe that certainly he should be punished because for his stupidity.
Yeah.
But certainly I think it's totally immoral that they would be going out and entrapping people, and that's what it is.
Yeah.
That's why, ladies and gentlemen, I would tell you, do not trust your best friend. He's probably an FBI informant. And if you have any question about that, go up on the Internet and look up InfraGuard. InfraGuard. This is a FBI system of informants all across America, probably 40,000 of them, that are watching you. This is perfectly legal. They report you on a regular basis or anybody they think might be dangerous. Now, certainly this, what William is talking about is something certainly much more diabolical. They pay this fellow who entrapped him probably $100,000, couple of $100,000.
Yeah, let's see the going rate.
And that couple of $100,000 to destroy this young man who was trusting, probably looking for a friend, and, you know, and here's a guy that is very, very convincing, is able to convince him to do something which is illegal. That doesn't excuse him in any way. I think that he has to be punished because he's potentially dangerous because he is so stupid.
Yeah.
On the other hand, do we have the right to go around actually provoking and simulating terrorist activities? Oh, if there is really a terrorist threat, we would have this sort of bombing going on all the time. We do not. The only times we see this, almost every single time, it's an agent provocateur.
Yeah.
Why are they coming up with all these agent provocateurs? Why to convince us there's a real terrorist threat when there is none, because if there was really a terrorist threat, why, they would have closed the southern border the day after the 9/11 attack. Ladies and gentlemen, they know there's no terrorist threat. They're manufacturing all of these things, and this poor young man will probably spend a good deal of the rest of his life in prison, and maybe he deserves to be there, not because he was malicious, but because he's stupid and because he could be manipulated into killing people. Go right ahead.
Yeah. That there is such a thing as culpable stupidity. Let me explain why I use the word prank. Footnote 15, page 10 in the charging affidavit referred to this guy's original plot, which would involve the use of what was described as, quote, a device that appeared as a toy that when activated would cause a minor explosion that would not cause injury, but would expel tiny notes containing ominous warnings. You're talking about something here on the nature of a glorified... for heaven's sake, I'm trying to remember the name of the device that you'd find in a cartoon. It's like the pop gun that, rather than firing a projectile, fires a small flag that says, bang. That's the type of thing we're talking about. It's more malicious than a prank, but it certainly doesn't reach the threshold of terrorism. And in the conversations he had with the informant, this is within the first couple of months meeting this guy, as they were spitballing ideas as to what they could do to create some kind of a disruption in Chicago, this young man has soon kept coming back repeatedly and emphatically to the idea that there would be no killing. As a matter of fact, that's quoted, no killing, there is no killing, from recorded conversations that he had with this informant. He also made a point of saying that you don't harm the police. Now, that's really interesting because one of the things that came out after he fell under the influence of the two undercover FBI agents who were apparently more persuasive than the confidential informant, they were able to lure this kid into expressing support for increasingly radical and increasingly potentially violent attacks that would involve injury to police officers and security personnel and so forth. But his original position was nobody gets hurt. We want to scare them. We want to make them an object of ridicule, them in this case being, of course, the police and other security people. But I don't want anybody to get hurt. What happened is that two of these undercover agents from the FBI showed up posing as terrorist financiers. And they started speaking that same pattern that you hear in every single case of this sort. They tried to appeal to this young man as a Muslim, assuming that he was a Muslim. Apparently he's either not a Muslim or he's not interested in the Islamic religion because it didn't really appeal to him. But the line that they used was that they wanted to do something in order to punish the United States government for killing Muslims abroad. That's the same line you hear in every single one of these prefabricated terrorist plots. They don't appeal to Muslims on the idea that they are going to be punishing the infidels for defying the will of Allah. They don't try to militate or to militarize them, make militant these individuals by talking about the outrages of our decadent culture or by our defiance of the Islamic religion. They always catalyze grievances against the United States government that aren't legitimate grievances. They try to catalyze resentment against the United States government for legitimate grievances that involve the interventionist foreign policy that results in the death of innocent people in places like Iraq and Afghanistan, Somalia and Pakistan, etc. But this kid wasn't even interested in that. What he said is that if there's going to be some role for religion in this, some role for Islam in this, that they should scapegoat the Muslims for whatever happened as a result of whatever campaign he got involved in. Now, the two undercover agents from the FBI, I suspect, and this is something I want to talk a little bit more about with his attorney, with Mr. Hassoun's attorney, I suspect what happens is that this kid realized at some point he was dealing with people who were far more dangerous and far more serious than he was, and he'd reached a point of no return, and next thing you know, they give him a satchel, they say that it's an anti-personnel bond, and he's putting it near Wrigley Field in Chicago. That's the sort of thing that only the federal government could bring about, taking a kid who's basically stupid, but rather harmless and turning him into somebody willing to do that.
And I think this is really rather frightening. But of course, if the FBI can do it, should we be surprised that the Islamic radicals can take people over in Palestine, get them to strap themselves full of bombs, and they go and blow themselves up. Ladies and gentlemen, but the fact that they would entrap a young man and destroy his life, that's what they've done. And he probably will spend most of his life in prison. His crime, he's stupid. Well, we'll be back here in a moment with William Grigg. Go right ahead, William.
Well, by way of sort of wrapping up in a little bow this conversation about agent provocateurs, it's interesting to point out.
Heart disease is on the rise. Clogged arteries, high blood pressure, and high cholesterol levels may not be fully detected by you, but the symptoms are there. Loss of energy, blood sugar spikes and drops, poor circulation, and irregular heartbeat are just a few of these that can alert you that something is wrong. Hear how Heart and Body Extract is making a difference in thousands of people's lives across America.
My blood pressure has normalized. My diabetes has totally improved.
Everyone is telling me now how much healthier I look. I'm telling everyone how much healthier I feel. I recommend Heart and Body Extract to everyone.
Anybody over 40 in the North American continent should be using this product as a preventative to keep their cardiovascular system healthy.
Order your 2-month supply today by calling 866-295-5305. That's 866-295-5305. Or order online, hbextract.com. Heart and Body Extract, 866-295-5305 or hbextract.com.
You may be new to freeze-dried foods. You may have storable food questions. You may want to buy your freeze-dried foods from a very reputable company and not go broke in the process. Welcome to the Freeze-Dry Guy. Okay, actually, we're more than just one guy. We're a California-based company that's been serving our U.S. military and other government agencies with the finest in freeze-dried storable foods and emergency rations since 1970. See all about us at freezedryguy.com. With Freeze-Dry Guy freeze-dried foods, you can and will be ready for just about any unexpected crisis. Freeze-dried guy foods are delicious, require little preparation, and will taste just as fresh decades from now as they do today. Just add hot water and serve. Backpackers consistently rate us number one year after year as the best tasting and ease of preparation. Isn't that what you want for your family? Visit freezedryguy.com or call 866-404-FOOD. That's 866-404-3663 or go to freezedryguy.com. Freeze-Dry Guy, the best you can buy.
Where are my car keys? What did I come in this room for? Where did I put that?
A common condition called age-related memory loss is robbing millions of people of their ability to remember and think clearly. And Alzheimer's and Parkinson's are occurring at younger ages, even early 20s and 30s. And there's much evidence that brain inflammation may be the cause. Brain inflammation may also cause depression and insomnia. But there's great news. Studies show by taking special, powerful nutrients, brain inflammation and its damaging effects may be greatly reduced. And that's why neurosurgeon Dr. Russell Blaylock created his brain repair formula to reduce brain inflammation and maintain a healthy brain. So, for a free book on brain health or information on Dr. Blaylock's special brain repair formula, call 1-800-SPECIAL or visit 1-800-SPECIAL.com. 1-800-SPECIAL.
You're tuned to the Global Star Radio Network. Thanks for listening.